This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's Pick Six with Mullion Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mullion Haw starts now.
Any surprise that Matt Eberflus is sticking with the OC Shane Waldron as his play caller? Did you think about what Olin Krutz said yesterday about the danger of going to a third play caller? Do you believe that issue influenced Eberflus's decision?
No, I think that not the third play caller thing. I don't think he's worried about that. I think that he probably feels that there's a reason they hired this guy and that the guy can do the job, honestly. And even if there's evidence against that, I think that's how he probably feels about it. He said that, it was pretty interesting. He talked about when he was asked about whether he feels pressure in his job, and he talked about how the league is week to week. The league is week to week, man. I mean, you look at people and how they do, how their team does, and your feelings on them, the public reaction, it changes all the time over the course of a season. So he feels that it's too early. It's too early in their season with all the difficult games they have ahead of them to go with a different play caller. There's a reason they hired the guy. They talked about his versatility. I don't know that taking that away from him and giving it to someone who wasn't hired to do it, wasn't in a position to do it, even if they've done it before, didn't do it so magnificently they were hired again to do it. See what I'm saying? So you hired this guy for a reason, and you got to kind of believe in that. And maybe you've got to get more involved as the head coach. Maybe you've got to give up your play calling, as we talked about earlier, in order to focus in on all the things that you want to see in order to play whatever brand of complimentary football you envision the Bears playing. And by the way, that's the one thing that has been a positive with Caleb Williams is he doesn't give the ball away. He has not thrown picks. You know, you look at different – there's nothing wrong with throwing a pick, as Peyton Manning once said every interception has its own story, but you shouldn't go out with the idea of doing that. And so he's been protecting the ball, which will give this team a chance, and that's a good sign. But there's not much more. I don't know. I worry about the development of the quarterback. I really do, and I think that's the problem. Is Shane Waldron is responsible for that in his play calling, and that's a problem right now.
There was a group text between the head coach, the offensive coordinator, and the general manager, Trace Armstrong, sent it after the game as they were flying back on Aaron McCaskey and said, there'll be no changes. There will be no changes. We're going to stick together as a group. This three-headed monster that I've created in Chicago will all stick together. But in all seriousness, This would be if you
don't
were
report
to,
that because people will believe you. I know you're being facetious.
I am kidding.
Was that before or after the email from Eberflus to Shane Waldron not to throw the ball to Cole Kmet?
Right. That's a whole other story that we should like pull the curtain back a little bit because like we were saying stuff on the air yesterday that never made it to the air and about a phone call that got cut off before the guy made the.
Oh, we were saying it off the air. Yeah, I'm catching.
Right, but anyway, so. This would be, if you were to demote Shane Waldron or to fire Shane Waldron, this would be equivalent in my mind like what I hate in baseball, where you fire the manager and then you elevate the bench coach. Oh, wait a minute. So the bench coach is sitting there with all the answers on how to fix everything. Usually the bench coach is a buddy of the manager. That's his playing cards, going out, spending the per diem, hanging out on the road guy, right? So the offensive room, if you get rid of Waldron, the other three guys that are there, the run game coordinator, the pass game coordinator, quarterback, they have all the answers. They've been keeping that from Shane. So there's not what about collaboration?
Right.
It's a big collaboration at Halas Hall. So that's why this doesn't make any sense. Unless you do what the Raiders did, which was you got rid of the offensive line coach, the quarterback's coach, as well as Getsy.
See,
in one false.
I understand what you're saying, and that's true. I don't like those kind of moves in season with mass firings after a half of a season has gone by. And I don't like using one knee-jerk reaction to justify or defend another. And that's what essentially people who have seen enough of Shane Waldron would be asking for. Fire him! He's worthless. I get why you'd think that after the last couple weeks, and frankly, I think he's had two games which he's committed unforgivable, unacceptable play calls, offensive football sins, if you will. But I don't think Matt Eberflus looks at it that way, and I think what we heard yesterday and what we continue to hear is a difference in the way that coaches view a 4-4 start and everyone outside the building views a 4-4 start. Maybe it's because of expectations, maybe it's because of the same agent, maybe it's because of alliances. We just don't know. But Matt Eberflus is going to be much slower to want to change for a lot of reasons. A lot of reasons. Maybe this is the way he looks at life or football than we are to be when we're clamoring for change. I don't think that Shane Waldron necessarily needs to get lost. He needs to get better. He needs to get smarter. And I think he needs to make sure that he's using those resources at his disposal. Chris Morgan, the run game coordinator, and Thomas Brown, the passing game coordinator, and doing whatever he can with Kerry Joseph to focus in what is best for Caleb Williams. You know what I would do? I would bring Caleb Williams into the mix more and ask him what does he like to do and why, and how can you help us frame the first 15 or the game plans? We want to run plays that you like to run and are comfortable executing. And that would be the nice pivot. So I don't know if Flusie's looking at this necessarily about his own coaching mortality yet, but I do think it his alliance with Shane Waldron speaks to how loyal I think he's going to be.
Oh, boy, good question.
That's the voice of Coach Dave Wanstead. He will be in here at 7:40 to 8:20, talking Bears, talking NFL, talking Big Ten college football. Did you see the video circulating on social media of our guy, DJ Moore, running off the field during the play as Caleb Williams continued to scramble? Should DJ be held accountable as Tyreek Stevenson was for not being part of the play?
I don't think this is a Tyreek Stevenson turn my back and taunt the fans and take myself out of the equation for 4 seconds. I do think that it's not a great look and probably bears some explanation from DJ Moore. I do also think that people this is making the rounds around the football community on social media. You see him limping and you do wonder fairly if he was injured on that play and wanted to gimp off the field, even though he came back onto the field for the next play. I do wonder if he was aware or kept running because he stepped out of bounds and knew that once you do that, you can't be part of the action. You're basically dead to your quarterback. I also wonder, he must have assumed that Caleb Williams was done scrambling because it did appear like he was going to be tackled. Those sound like excuses for DJ Moore. I do think he deserves a benefit of the doubt because he's been a professional. And yes, he is, full disclosure, as everybody knows, on our show every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, as he was yesterday, creating a little bit of a stir with his comments about Matt Eberflus as well. But I want to hear from DJ Moore on this. I want to hear him answer questions, which he likely will do tomorrow about it. We've reached out to him to see if he wants to address it. If he does, he will. But I don't think this is a Tyreek Stevenson situation, because I just don't think that he has the same track record. He has earned the benefit of the doubt in a way other pros haven't.
The apples and oranges to me as far as Tyreek Stevenson and DJ Moore. But it did cause enough of a stir. There were quite a few text messages that I was receiving that I went back to the DVR and got to that specific. I mean, this is the first quarter of the game, folks. If you did DVR it and haven't erased it yet, and I don't blame you for erasing it if you did, but it looks like, first of all, it looks like Caleb Williams is going to step out of bounds on the play. And if you, in the camera catches DJ going off and limping, he's hopping on one leg, and it looks like he's when you lose sight of him, at least on my TV, it looks like he was about to sit down on the bench because he was dealing with something. Charlie horse, a cramp. I'm not quite sure. Now, he did come back out on the very next play. This is also the play that we had the offensive pass interference that was a nuisance on Allen. And now maybe he saw that flag and thought the play was over. Maybe I'm not sure. We don't know. And he will have to address it. He's been asked to address it. If he chooses to, he'll call in this morning. But I think this is very different. But I understand it's not a great look. It's not a great look.
So when a player leaves the field, and this is the thing that Eberflus said, the official threw his hat down. That means he's not eligible to be back on the field. Dead. So what you have to do is you have to get back on the field and reestablish yourself. And then you are allowed back in the play. There are a lot of teams that will tell, and a lot of coaches that will tell a player, either go to the ground or go sit on the bench. Because once you go back on the field, before you establish yourself, the quarterback may throw the ball. You may muddle up the play. And I'm not saying that's what happened here. I'm just saying that is the backstory to how things work in the NFL when you do leave the field. And I think you're probably right, Dustin. He probably something. He had a cramp or whatever it was, and he's kind of hopping off the field. And, okay, so they're down a man on the play, but the play, the quarterback had already he had already kind of rolled and then turned and rolled back. So I think if DJ had come back on the field, that may have just muddled up the vision the quarterback has of what's going on. So I think there's a lot to get to. I was surprised that Eberflus couldn't just answer that question, to be honest with you. Why couldn't he just say something like that?
I'm not sure that it was had people were aware of it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it had made the rounds. Okay. It was probably mid-afternoon and after he spoke.
All right. Just not,
he was not, as far as I know, he was not asked about it.
I don't think it's a big deal at all, frankly. But we'll find out.
It's such a multi-layered question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 7 a.m. this morning. What did you make of Jalen Johnson telling the afternoon show he has no issue with any of his teammates speaking their mind?
Nobody was gossiping or talking behind nobody's back. At the end of the day, I don't think anybody aired anybody out or said something that could have been kept between the locker room. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, our locker rooms are our locker rooms. So, I mean, we're very much so vocal. We are very much so transparent with each other, the coaches, a player, the coach. I mean, it's a very vocal and transparent group, locker room, facility.
Are you okay with what you just heard there again from Jalen Johnson on our afternoon show?
You know, I love that guy, and he's such a great guest with those guys. It's tons of fun. It's appointment radio. You know, I think that it was the second guessing of the coaches that looked so bad last week. It wasn't players ripping on other players. No one came out and really went after other players. And I think they all get along, but it was, that you just can't, if you're in charge, you can't have everybody questioning everything you do. You got to have a little buy-in from the group. So I felt that Matt Eberflus lost a lot of ground last week, and I felt the coaching staff lost a lot of ground last week. I didn't think they handled it particularly well. I think if he had come out and spoken after the Washington game, and on Monday after the Washington game, the same way he did at halftime of this game, even if I didn't buy into the fact that everything was his fault. But had he been like that after the first game, I don't think you'd have heard any of that stuff. So it would appear he's learned something. But he also did tell the captains, like, knock it off. And,
yes.
And he doesn't want to see it. So, I mean, it's not about you and your teammates. It's about the other people and the coaches and the people on the staff and the feeling that there was no respect.
Well, I think the key is that nothing, according to Jalen Johnson, nothing, at least from him, that he said here or at the podium or on social media was nothing that he didn't tell Flus. I almost have a bigger issue, you know, just being older than these players obviously are. Like, I would have never called my coach by their nickname if I was interviewed about my coach. I wouldn't have called, you know, Gronk, you know, like short for Growwinkle. You know, like, I wouldn't have called my coach from high school like a shorter name. Like, that would have been like the worst thing I could have ever done. Forget about a 15-yard penalty. Calling him by a nickname instead of his full name if I was ever asked by, you know, the Elmhurst Press about that or some craziness. But I'm just saying, the fact that they're calling the guy by his nickname, to me, is almost more disrespectful.
I think it almost speaks to the kind of camaraderie, though, he wants and invites. And as a defensive...
Who wants it? Eberflus?
Matt Eberflus. Yeah. Flusie.
Okay.
Or Flus.
Yeah, I can't verify this. I think he's changed the E in front of the house to an F.
Because... Well, we'll have to check that out.
I think that's just great.
It depends. How can he get that work done during the season? That's pretty tough. I think it speaks to how they have connected last year, maybe, and feel a connection, like more of an assistant coach or position coach than a head coach. It's a fine line to walk when you appreciate candor and you want players to feel empowered. And yet when you have a week like last week where there were players openly, publicly questioning the authority in the building, they weren't questioning each other. There wasn't offense versus defense. It was players versus coaching staff.
Yeah.
And that can be galvanizing for a team in some ways. They could be us against him or them as a staff. And so I don't think that's a problem. At the same time, you've now lost two games in a row. And from our perspective, I don't want to be a hypocrite in saying things that we don't appreciate some of these sound bites because it gives great reason to talk about them, and it's really compelling stuff. But I do feel from a football perspective, when I'm looking at this in that vein, with that hat on, I'm like, okay, this is the week the Bears need to shut up and play. And I think this is the week they need to stop talking about what they're talking about. And stop really analyzing everything so openly and publicly. And, you know, go to practice, put your hand in the dirt, and learn how to play physical football again. Because they look soft. And they're playing a team accused of being soft. And this is the week that they need to remind us that they're not soft. So you know how you do that? Not with your words, with your actions. So Jalen Johnson is right. But I think this week, I hope the conversation shifts toward being a good football team again and what that takes.
See, I just want to ask players, what was the worst call in that Washington game?
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Molly, I got a question for you and Hawk.
That's the voice of Jarrett Payton. He is here with you guys at 9. And don't forget, on Sunday, the pregame show will be out at Jarrett's place in St. Charles.
As will you.
On the Fox.
Say it. You got to be included in that.
I will be there as well. I've confirmed that with our guy Patrick from Gage Park. He will be there as well.
And you'll be signing autographs, and you'll be taking photos.
Kissing babies and taking photos.
There we go.
Yes.
And talking to the Elmhurst Press.
Yes.
I thought he stopped talking to them.
I think it might be the Independent now.
What's bad about this coach? I'm talking to
him. No, it's the Jimmy
I'll give
G.
Him my, Jimmy G. Yes, it was.
I'll give him my thoughts on the Park District referendum that I voted for yesterday. Why or why not I did or didn't vote. I won't reveal my vote. But I did vote. I've got my sticker on.
Yeah,
prove
look
it.
At you.
I'm sure you do.
So
do,
all four of us have voted.
Yes.
So all we really care about.
Right here, buddy.
I voted. Sticker.
Kiss me, I voted. It's right there on my flag and anthem vest.
I'm not kissing you, man.
All right, back to the question. What did you think of the Bulls game against the Jazz, and how concerned are you about the illness to Josh Giddey, injuries, plural, to Zach LaVine?
Well, Josh Giddey played through it. He was kind of listed as questionable, and they talked about it after the game or before the game. They wondered. Zach concerns me a little bit because this is the second injury, and we're just a month into the season, really. First month of the season, two injuries. He's missed some time. It is the modern NBA, so you didn't expect him to play. They didn't play with Lauri Markkanen because of back spasms, and it didn't matter. I did not expect the Bulls to lose to the winless Jazz.
Yeah.
I did not expect them to lose last Friday to the lowly, hapless Nets. They are in a two-game losing streak. I don't know what to expect. I want to either take a course or teach a course and hired Casey Johnson to teach it. How to interpret and understand this year's Bulls team. I don't know what their mission is. I don't know what to expect from them. I don't know what they're doing on a nightly basis. They don't play defense. They shoot the three. I want to call it Billy Ball, but then I learned Billy doesn't want him to call Billy Ball. This is the most confusing team in recent memory.
Yeah, how about that? He doesn't like the Billy Ball stuff. That surprised. I mean, it took him 3 or 4 years to figure out that they should shoot more three-pointers. And then the guy who was also not playing last night was a guy who could shoot three-pointers, a 7-footer from Euro that could shoot a three. But whatever. It was also interesting last night, Casey Johnson reporting that Zach LaVine probably wanted to play in that game last night, wanted to give it a go, and the Bulls were the ones that told him to sit down, which will lead this Bulls fan to say, well, this is a situation where they're trying to protect. If Zach plays last night, do you think they win the game?
Yes.
Okay. Well, maybe the Bulls don't exactly want to win every game like they're telling us. And then now they're, you know, it's a long season. They've got four games this week, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, they're a very hard team to figure out. When you get 60 points from Vooch, Io, and Kobe, you think you're going to win. Mm-hmm. But you can't give up 130-something. Give me a break.
Yeah. This is a difficult one for me because I think they're going to try to trade Zach LaVine, and clearly they shouldn't because they're not going to win a game without him. I mean, they were doing pretty well. Weren't we impressed with the 3-2 start? And now they themselves look hapless and hopeless, frankly, without him. And they have lost to two pretty bad games. I mean, you know, the Nets are supposed to be awful, and everyone knows it. And these guys are supposed to be better, the Jazz, but they were winless, and you give them their first win. So I think that means that Zach is important, and I don't know that everyone wants him to be, because I don't know if but you're right, David. I think it's a real mystery as to what they they're really going to do. What do we call it if we don't call it Billy Ball? I mean, that is confusing. Donovan Disk? I mean, what? I don't even know what it would be. Is it because his name is William?
Onovan Ball because there is no D?
Oh, boy, that's pretty good. But that would just probably not be as happy for
There's
him.
There's no I in team, so he doesn't like the Billy part.
I don't know.
Different question on a different topic.
Mike Florio, he'll be here 8:44 talking about the NFL trade deadline today at 3 hour time after winning two straight games in SoCal, including a surprising 4-3 shootout in Saturday against those Kings late afternoon game. The Blackhawks are on a roll, but still prone to inconsistency. What stood out to you?
You know, I think that the fact that they won is what stood out to me. You know, they need to win games. I frankly have been a little bit disappointed that they weren't better. I thought they were going to be better, and then they didn't come out of the season very sharp. And then you get a couple of wins in a row, and they, you know, it's good. It's just good. The idea that Connor Bedard is also learning how to win. He's on a winning team. He's not just, you know, out there as a potential superstar, future superstar, but suffering all these growing pains. And, you know, the idea is they got all these young guys and they're going to bring them along slowly. And I think that's good. I like that idea. I like that you've improved the team a little bit. And in his second year, you're going to be significantly more competitive and hopefully be adding players to that mix as you go along. I felt, you know, watch them, got to go see them a few times, including in Montreal, his first game in Canada, David. I don't know if you mentioned that.
Before.
I probably haven't told you about it. But it was just it's really fun to watch that kid and to know how good he's going to be. But you wanted the team to do well. You wanted to feel like he was doing something other than putting on a show for the people in a loss. And so I'm glad that they've won games, and that's my big takeaway. They're playing better defense. But they've won, and that's huge.
Winning two games in a row and Connor Bedard having three assists on Sunday against the Ducks, that sticks out to me.
The kid's got three goals, but nine assists, 12 points in 13 games, yeah. And people are talking about how he's not scoring as much or he can't find the back of the net. Fair, because I think he's hard on himself. You saw him snap a stick in frustration, but he's doing everything that he can. And this is a better team, improving team. Around him, Ryan Donato, I don't know how long he's going to continue on this heater he's on, but he has been a revelation. You look at Arvid Soderblom, the backup goalie, had a big day on Sunday. They went back-to-back in California, and they come home with 3-2 road trip. Tavo got the message. He was demoted, and he responded. So this is a team, I think, that you're seeing evidence of coaching. Luke Richardson can coach a little bit. He's not afraid to call guys out. He's not afraid to demote veterans. This guy is a hockey lifer, and he coaches this team like somebody who knows what they're doing. Hawks are fun to watch. Wednesday night, they get the chance to do something they didn't do last year, win 3 in a row. Wednesday night, Patrick Kane back at the UC.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
How surprising is it that Indiana is ranked number 8 in the latest AP poll? And this is college football, folks. Two spots ahead of Notre Dame. Are you excited to see the first college football playoff selection committee playoff rankings tonight at 6 on the 4-letter network? And what is the greatest question in your mind that will be answered tonight?
Love this question, even though it doesn't pay a ton of respect to Indiana football, but they haven't really earned it because this is some kind of season they're putting together. Cignetti is a candidate for National Coach of the Year. We'll find out tonight just how much the committee values or how everyone values the two-loss, soon to be maybe three-loss teams in the SEC or other conferences.
Right.
How do they value and respect depth versus flukiness, which you can say Indiana maybe a little fluky. Didn't expect these things. So how do they measure and weigh the expected depth in power conferences versus the unexpected teams on kind of lightning in a bottle seasons?
Well, I think it's a great story. And they've got Michigan this week at home. And then circle the calendar, November the 23rd, they are at number 3, the Ohio State. But as far as what question will be answered tonight, probably no questions other than the one maybe, I hope it's addressed, Mully, what you brought up, which is that potential elimination game this weekend between Alabama and LSU. The other thing, and I'm sure they'll do it, but if not, if they want a little suggestion from this producer of sports, I want a bracket tonight, right? I want to see that bracket. I want to see how they're laying it out, the teams that get the bye, who's playing who, and then if you're able to win that game, how, you know, it. The first one I saw Alabama playing Notre Dame.
Wow.
And then, you know, who do they play next? Like, who, you know, and is that game at Alabama, right? Because is the higher seeded team host? Yeah, I need to be reminded of how this whole thing works, but I'm thrilled it's 12 teams and I'm looking forward to it. Don't know that I'll watch it live, but I'll fire up the DVR.
Yeah, I think that Indiana will figure out before it's all said and done because of that Ohio State game. That gives them like kind of the one marquee chance to make their season. I don't know if they lose that game and they lose it badly, that they're going to have much of a chance that they'll be in the college playoff. And maybe that's wrong, but I'm just saying when your schedule is like that, and you could argue Penn State has a similar type of problem as we mentioned earlier. I think what's really interesting to me is to see how they set it up with the conferences, because there are some power conferences that are in charge of college football, and there are these smaller schools and some of them that are that are not really held in the same esteem. So how do you set it up? I think the top of this college football selection committee picks, we know what they are. I think they will follow what's going on in the national polls. But I'm very curious about how the rest of it works out. And frankly, another one is Notre Dame. Like, you know, Notre Dame, it's an argument school. Every year we have an argument about how they fit in and what they have to do and where do they fit. And we'll find out they are number one. What do you think?
One loss
Notre Dame, but a bad loss. But where do you set them up now to see how they would move up if they do win out? Or I think that's what I'm talking about. Is that if you've got all of these kind of SEC, Big Ten schools in the final like 12 to 15, right? That means you're setting up for a loss and you're out. If one of these teams ends up in the top, if a two-loss SEC team ends up like 10, 11, that tells you they're going to get in with three losses.
Yep.
I'm just saying, I think we're going to be reading this sort of thing out of the first poll. I love that they've expanded it. I think it's going to be fun.
It will be fun.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.